before you drink. What you get isn't always what you think.
Beers of Alaska, beer on the last frontier. Beers of Alaska, learn about them here.
Well, don't settle for the first, for it might be the worst.
And welcome to this month's Drinking on the Last Frontier. I'm your host, Bill Howell, here on KDLL 91.9, listener-supported public radio for the Central Kenai Peninsula. As always, thanks to Recess Duty for playing us in with our theme song. We've got a lot of good interviews this month, but before we get started with those, let's talk about news. The major news story right now in the beer world and everywhere else is still the outbreak of COVID-19. I'll be talking about this in detail later in the show. Most breweries and brew pubs around the state have reopened for some amount of on-site consumption, though many are operating at a reduced capacity to allow for sufficient social distancing. If you're curious as to the exact status of your local watering hole, check out its webpage, Facebook page, or give it a call. Numerous beer festivals across Alaska, the U.S., and the world have been canceled. On October 21st, Oktoberfest 2020 in Munich, Germany was canceled. On May 18th, the Soldotna Rotary Club announced that the 2020 Kenai Peninsula Beer Festival was canceled. On May 21st, the Brewers Association announced that the Great American Beer Festival, originally scheduled for September 22nd to 26th at the Colorado Convention Center in Denver, would pivot to an immersive online experience on October 16th and 17th. The event is still in planning, but experiences will likely include beer tastings, conversation with brewers, local brewery activations, and at-home beer and food pairing deliveries. The festival's renowned professional beer competition will still take place in 2020. A panel of more than 100 professional judges will assess the more than 7,000 expected entries to identify the three beers that best represent each style category. The Brewers Association laid off 25% of its staff in late April, quote, in order to maintain the long-term viability, end quote, of the National Trade Group, which represent the interests of small and independent U.S. craft brewers. The Brewers Association announced the job cuts on its website. We thoughtfully, carefully, and painfully weighed options to arrive at those decisions. We believe these actions will help the association weather the storm at this time and to remain committed to its purpose to promote and protect American craft brewers, their beers, and the community of brewing enthusiasts, the Brewers Association said. In addition to the job cuts, the Brewers Association has enacted tiered salary reductions for its management team, in addition to operational budget cuts that were made in April. The Brewers Association was forced to cancel two of its signature events, the annual Craft Brewers Conference and Brewers Expo and Savor, as well as the World Beer Cup competition earlier this spring, due to concerns caused by the spread of COVID-19 in the U.S. More recently, it's shifted both the American Homebrewers Association HomebrewCon and the Great American Beer Festival from physical to virtual events. On the bright side, Cooper Landing Brewing has announced that it is close to opening its new location. In preparation for the move, beer sales at its former location have been discontinued. The new brewery on the Sterling Highway should be open for business sometime in June. Seward Brewing Company has also opened for business. It opened on May 22nd for takeout and on May 28th for dine-in service. Hours are 3 to 9 p.m., closed on Wednesdays. In last month's beer style segment, I talked about beers brewed with Kvik yeast from Norway. On May 14th, Turnagain Brewing in Anchorage released two beers made using that yeast, a Kvik Pale Ale and a Kvik IPA. They are only available by glass at the brewery. The Brewers Guild of Alaska hosted a virtual beer tasting over several nights in May. Sample in Place, or SIP Alaska, consisted of virtual sessions at 8 different breweries around the state. Attendees were emailed a beer list in advance and encouraged to purchase the specific beers from the various breweries to sample during the virtual sessions. Brewers video chatted from the breweries via Facebook Live, gave virtual tours, asked trivia questions for prizes, and answered questions from attendees. While no substitute for a real festival, the event was well received and helped raise funds to support the Brewers Guild of Alaska. Up next, we'll have our first interview with Cassix Brewery. This is Drinking on the Last Frontier, KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna.
KDLL Public Radio provides the news, interviews, features, and entertainment programming you trust from around the world and right here at home. Do you value local, responsible reporting or diverse music brought to you by your friends and neighbors? How about in-depth shows that are unique to your community? Then please support KDLL. We can't continue to bring you the local programming you enjoy without your support. Please visit kdll.org and click the donate button today.
For our first interview this month, we've got Tim Domick, the brewer at Cassix Brewery in Nikiski. Tim, how you doing today?
Hey, doing good. Thanks for having me.
Hey, thanks for talking to us. So, first up, how are things going out there at Cassix with the big pandemic and everything?
We've been holding up. We've been keeping the ship afloat and still doing it, and glad to be picking up as the summer goes on here.
Okay. So you guys are open for on-site consumption again, right?
Yes, we are. Yep.
Okay, great. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself? How did you end up in this crazy craft beer business that we all love so much?
Well, I was living in Wasilla, and my wife, then girlfriend at the time, she was raised down here, and we decided to move down here, and I was just looking for work. I found a position as a keg washer was available. So I was talking with Deb Cassick about that. Then I just kind of slowly made my way up, learning more and more. Started out washing kegs to bottling on the bottling line to brewing beer and filtering, and just slowly made my way up.
So did you come out of any home brewing experience, or was it purely on the job training?
It was purely on the job. The day before my first brew, I actually went over to my coworker's house who had a homebrew set up, and I was taking notes and I was asking as many questions as I could all the night before my first brew, solo brew.
Wow. Well done, sir.
Thank you.
What are you guys up to out there right now? I mean, I remember there was talk late last year that you guys were looking at moving into canning. Is that still in the plans? It's kind of on hold for right now. Where do you guys stand on that?
We are actually waiting on the canner itself. It has been purchased, and we are actually piling up cans. We got stacks of cans 9-10 feet high in the warehouse right now. So that is in the works, as well as new labels, just a redesign. So we're looking to go to 12 ounce, so the 6-packs, and I believe we'll also be looking at doing the 19.2, the tall boy cans. On top of that, we'll still keep our 22 ounce bottler, the Maheen, as we do barley wines and specialties and stuff like that.
Okay. And this canner, how many heads, and is it manual, automated? What are you looking at?
It's a Wild Goose automated inline. I believe it is a 6-head, and it's technically a mobile unit. We can move it around, swap it out between the bottler and the canner itself too. So we're looking forward to it. We've been talking about it for a long time, and you know, watching all the videos online and the tutorials and stuff like that. It's kind of the way things are going. It seems like more and more places are moving to cans.
Yeah, that definitely seems to be the trend, particularly up here. Have you guys got any new brews coming out anytime soon?
So we have a new double IPA. It's called the AK Lake Day IPA, 8.3%. It's about 70 IBUs. It's a little bit lighter in color, more of a straw color as compared to the morning wood, a little bit more bitter. And just this past winter, we did a German chocolate stout that used cacao nibs, and we toasted our own coconut.
Yes, I heard a lot of good things about that one.
Yeah, that's a good one. We do like that one. We're starting to experiment more with fruit beers. We're looking at doing a guava pale. Yeah.
So back to the canning, is your plan to basically can your flagships, or are you going to be doing one-off cannings?
We do plan on canning our flagships, the Beavertail Blonde, the Morningwood IPA. We're looking at making some of them seasonal, such as the red. That might be a possibility, but we also are looking at canning the double IPA, the AK Lake Day as well.
So the double IPA, it's not going to replace the morning wood, right? It's just going to complement it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it was something we were looking for. A little bit lighter in color. We wanted more bitterness to come through, more of a hop forward profile.
Well, good. So anything else going on out there you want to share with us?
I'm not sure. Well, there's been a change in ownership as well.
Yeah, I think everybody has heard that.
Yeah, and it's been great. It's been great for the business. It's been great for the brewery. The McGlassons, they bring in a ton of new energy, and they have lots of potential, and they know this place has lots of potential. Well, not changing it too much. It was a really good, seamless transition, and we were more than excited. We're glad everything worked out.
I noticed one thing that did change is your logo's been redesigned, right?
Oh, yeah. The logo is kind of a total rebrand. The new logo, we also have new tap handles coming out. We'll have new merchandise with the new logo, stuff like that, coming out of the brewery and stuff like that.
Sounds good. One final thing, I think you've been having food trucks out there fairly regularly?
Yeah, we just started up last week. Tuk Tuk, Thai food, the food truck, they were out last weekend. And it was a great turnout. They have amazing, amazing food.
That's like a Friday, Saturday thing?
Usually Fridays, I believe, 4 to 7.
Okay. Well, hey, Tim, thank you so much. Really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us. And good luck out there. Keep the faith and stay healthy. And, you know, hope we all have a good summer up here.
Yeah, you too. Thanks, Bill.
Hey, this is Steve Horn, inviting you to join me Friday night, 7:15 to 9 p.m. for the Electric River. Music that makes you feel good during these times of being hunkered down, social distancing, and uncertainty. Locally produced show, back on the air, Friday nights, 7:15. I'll be around.
Hello and welcome back to Drinking on the Last Frontier here on KDLL 91.9 FM Kenai Soldotna. I'm your host, Bill Howell. And it's time for another installment in what I really wish was not an ongoing series, Craft Beer in the Time of Coronavirus, Part 3. In my previous two reports, I focused primarily on U.S. craft brewers, but COVID-19 has dramatically reduced beer production and consumption around the world, hitting all craft and independent brewers extremely hard. Almost everywhere, tap rooms and pubs that provided a base of support for the majority of smaller businesses have been shuttered or reduced to carry out and delivery operations only. Even a bump in to-go sales will not make up for the loss of revenue from taproom and retail sales. No one is in an appreciatively better situation based upon their size or age when a significant portion of their sales opportunities via their own taproom, bars, or other retailers are either closed or have extremely restricted sales opportunities right now, according to Mary McDonald, Executive Director of the Ohio Craft Brewers Association. On the plus side, grocery stores, bottle shops, and online alcohol sales have seen a spike in the demand for beer. In the third week of March, market research firm Nielsen saw U.S. alcoholic beverage sales rise 55%. The U.S. is already the world's second largest beer market, and once widespread quarantining became the norm, online alcohol sales rose by 243%, and beer sales jumped 34%. It's unclear whether the surge will continue. In certain countries, including Mexico and South Africa, sales increases were due to panic buying before the federal government shut down alcohol production. Customers have also shown more interest in buying beer through alternative channels during the COVID-19 lockdown. These include direct from brewery shipping, curbside pickup from breweries and restaurants, and alcohol delivery apps like DoorDash in the U.S. and Deliveroo in Britain. Brewers who set up such arrangements before shelter-in-place orders were issued have a distinct advantage. A late March survey by the Brewers Association found that 99% of over 938 respondents from craft and independent breweries had been affected by the pandemic. More than 90% of respondents saw a decline in on-site sales, with 87% having closed their taprooms or brewpubs. Close to 60% saw a dip in distributor orders, and about 88% experienced canceled events. Hard work and government assistance, including loans, grants, and extensions of sales tax payments, are unlikely to be enough to help small breweries stay in business. As I reported last month, a Brewbound survey of 455 respondents across 49 states and Washington, D.C., found 46% of independent and craft brewers indicated they would likely close within 3 months. It's not just small craft breweries that are being affected. In Canada, Molson Coors Beverage Company announced in late March that it withdrew its financial outlook for 2020 and beyond. Around the same time, Labatt Breweries of Canada said it would shift production from beer to hand sanitizer at 5 manufacturing facilities. Like many large brewers and distillers who are using their alcohol to produce hand sanitizer, Labatt is donating the sanitizer to frontline workers. Labatt is also donating sanitizer to Food Banks Canada, as well as restaurants and bars that have remained open. Similar scenarios involving significant dips in sales and expanded delivery services are unfolding across Europe and Australia. Belgian microbreweries, including Brussels-based N. Stomlings, are bringing customers cases of beer by bike. Salford, Britain-based Seven Brothers Brewery, and its sibling brand, Four Sisters Distillery, opened a gin and beer drive-through stand. Sydney-based Akasha Brewery is using an existing fleet of vans to deliver freshly brewed beer to still-open bottle shops. Asian brewers and markets were hit earlier and harder. Although Wuhan, China began easing restrictions in early April as COVID-19 cases in the area dwindled, China's lockdown seriously affected on-premise consumption and beer sales for the large gatherings for the Lunar New Year. China is the world's largest beer market. In late February, Anheuser-Busch InBev reported it lost about $170 million in Chinese earnings in January and February. The company told Financial Times reporters George Hammond and Judith London a rise in e-commerce sales was the single bright spot. In Thailand, 47 of the country's 77 provinces engaged in short-term ban of alcohol sales, some until April 15th and others until April 30th. The purpose of the ban was to discourage gatherings for the Thai New Year, which is traditionally celebrated between April 13th and 15th. Throughout Africa and Latin America, large and small brewers saw severe losses. Nigeria's federal government continued to allow alcohol production, but imposed travel restrictions between states. This limited producers' ability to transport alcohol from breweries to stores. In addition, some Nigerian states instituted curfews, which further discouraged sales. In Mexico, the world's sixth largest beer market, the governors of the states of Tabasco, Yucatan, Sonora, Quintana Roo, Campeche, Aguascalientes, and Nuevo León restricted or banned alcohol sales. Mayors in other Mexican cities restricted hours for alcohol purchases. Brazil, the world's third largest beer market, was set to expand its premium beer industry this spring. In mid-March, Ambev, the Brazilian unit of Anheuser-Busch InBev, announced it would invest about $382 million to open a new brewery in northern Brazil. Shortly afterward, Ambev stated it would utilize the alcohol at one of its breweries in Rio de Janeiro to produce hand sanitizer rather than beer. Also in mid-March, Heineken had expected to invest about $183 million to expand its Ponta Grossa plant in southern Brazil. Both AmBev and Heineken's plans for expansion may be modified or delayed because of the COVID-19 pandemic. For every small brewery that closes, the large brewers that remain will have access to that business's talent and share of the market. The change was already coming before the pandemic. In 2019, over 300 small and independent brewers closed in the U.S. This was the largest number of closures of such brewers in a single year. In the coming months, there is likely to be a drop in the diversity of beers available as the stock of craft beers is depleted. Since most bars, restaurants, and tap rooms are still closed, beer sales for both large and small brewers are likely to remain lower than usual. The industry may see off-premises surges through grocery stores, bottle shops, e-commerce sites, and delivery apps as government restrictions ease in late spring and summer. Large brewers are likely to resume the production of perennial favorites with some exceptions. China is set to produce and sell more premium beers. In late March, China Resources Beer, the country's largest brewer, announced it would close breweries, creating lower-priced products and increase its output of Heineken. Large brewers may rely on 2019 sale figures for craft brewers to make beers that build on last year's craft beer trends. Offerings will likely include hazy IPAs, lagers, brews with coffee ingredients, and sour beers, which saw U.S. sales up 40% in 2019. It's likely that large brewers will come to favor cans. Some brewers are pooling supplies of bottles. Yet even large brewers like Sleeman Breweries, Canada's third biggest brewer, are short on bottles. We don't have enough bottles in our plant to run at normal levels. We're still producing beer. We still have bottles, just not as many as we would like, said John Sleeman, founder of Sleeman Breweries, in a late March interview with Jake Edmonston of the Financial Post. Small breweries that hang on are likely to temporarily shift away from relying on tap rooms to support their bottom lines. For the foreseeable future, sports remain canceled and only small gatherings may come to be allowed in late spring and beyond. Grocery stores and bottle shops remain reliable points of sale. Independent and craft brewers are working hard to establish relationships, transport products, or find distributors to ensure their goods can be found in stores. Small breweries are also forming partnerships to share bottles, pool labor, and other resources, and collaborate on advertising strategies. Both small and large breweries are turning towards digital and TV ads to showcase new beers, encourage responsible alcohol use, and remind customers to be safe and engage in social distancing. Craft breweries are also looking online. There's been a flurry of work to establish virtual happy hours and drinking parties, as well as online tastings and beer festivals. As I reported in the news section, the Brewers Guild of Alaska held its SIP AK virtual beer tour on several evenings this month. Kenai River Brewing held a virtual release for its two-timing trout ale. Even the Brewers Association announced that the Great American Beer Festival will be held virtually this year. Many other such events will continue to take place, especially since polls show that many Americans are hesitant to return to tap rooms and bars, even after closure orders are rescinded. One of the big questions for the coming months will be how the hop industry and breweries left standing will address a potential glut of hops. Throughout the world, hop production has increased significantly in the past 3 years. In the U.S. alone, production in Idaho, Oregon, and Washington, the three main hop-producing states, totaled a record high of 112 million pounds, which was up 5% from the 2018 crop. With many independent and craft breweries suddenly out of the market, growers are reaching out to brewers to ensure crops do not go to waste. Crosby Hop Farm, a Marion, Oregon-based grower, said it is addressing concerns by offering U.S. brewers free shipping, extended payment terms, and one-on-one hop contract analysis. Even in a time of physical separation, we are all interconnected and must act quickly and responsibly to support our communities. We are committed to doing our part to lessen the impact by offering more flexible financial terms for our customers who we consider part of the Crosby Hop family. Our hope is that these measures will make it easier for craft brewers experiencing hardship to keep on brewing, said Blake Crosby, Chief Executive Officer of Crosby Hop Farm, in a press release. Unfortunately, for all these reasons, it looks like I will have to continue this series of reports for some months to come. In the meantime, please remember to do everything you can to support your local craft breweries. If you can afford to do so, buy their products, buy their merchandise, buy their gift cards. Let's not let this pandemic destroy any of the breweries and beers that we enjoy so much. Up next, we have an interview with Lee Ellis, Chief Operating Officer for Midnight Sun Brewing Company and the President of the Brewers Guild of Alaska. This is Drinking on the Last Frontier, KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna.
Everybody's got a story. We want to share those stories and keep you in the loop. Tune in to the KDLL Evening News weekdays at 5:20 to hear stories about your community, your neighbors, and to get the latest news to help you make informed decisions. The KDLL Evening News with me, Shaylin Cochran, weekdays at 5:20 right here on KDLL 91.9 FM Kenai Soldotna, public radio for the Central Kenai Peninsula.
Up next, we've got an interview with Lee Ellis, the Chief Operating Officer for the Midnight Sun Brewing Company in Anchorage and the President of the Brewers Guild of Alaska. Lee, how are you doing, sir?
I am doing fantastic, Bill.
Great. Well, thanks for taking the time to talk to us. First up, how is Midnight Sun doing these tough days that we're all living through? You guys just celebrated your 25th anniversary, right?
We sort of celebrated
sort of,
it.
Yeah.
We had a minimal celebration. We had a lot of things planned for our normal anniversary, which occurs May 5th or Cinco de Mayo. Unfortunately, we just did a limited release of our 25th anniversary ale, and that was about all we could do. We do have plans to do some anniversary events this next week, the first week of June. Now that things are open again, we're going to do a Super Taco Tuesday and a Super Tour on Thursday, and we're going to have a big cellar sale on Wednesday. We're going to have a bunch of beers that we've aged for up to 7 years available up in the loft, including barley wines and imperial stouts and things like that. And then having a First Frickin' Friday with Scott Clendaniel on June 5th there. So we're going to be doing some anniversary stuff this next week.
That sounds good. So obviously you guys are open for on-site consumption again.
That's correct. We were able to open about 2 weeks ago under the very limited restrictions. And then we're following, you know, Anchorage rules as opposed to state rules. So we're in a slightly different category than some other places in the state. But yeah, we're back to being open almost fully. We still have some spaced out tables, but we're back.
Well, that's good. That's good. So when you just did, I know because I took part in it, we just did the SIP AK virtual event that was kind of sponsored by the Brewers Guild, and Midnight Sun took part of it. So what did you think of that? From a attendee's perspective, I thought that was a pretty good idea considering the limitations we all had to operate under.
Yeah, I think it was a pretty cool deal. Originally we had peak-to-peak productions, and the Rotary and a few other groups reached out to us looking for ways to raise some money in these tough times. And it's definitely really challenging not being able to have a retail front and then try to do fundraisers and things like that. So this was kind of a collaborative project by a couple different entities. It has been going on nationally, so many guilds across the country had to cancel different events throughout this time. And so a lot of them have done different online events. And I have a national call with all the other guild leaders in the country every Thursday. And from what I understand, it's gone over pretty well and people have enjoyed it. You know, the only challenge is just getting your beers out to your folks. So we didn't get to pick anything too wild and crazy just because we wanted to make sure everybody had a chance to enjoy the beer that they were supposed to enjoy, I guess.
Yeah, that is a little bit of the challenge, particularly in a state like Alaska, trying to get beers that everyone can have access to.
Yeah, that was definitely the primary challenge looking at this event was, how do you get beer from folks who don't have distributors or mostly are taproom focused? And I think, you know, the our development coordinator, Alex, for the Guild and Darcy from Peak to Peak did a really good job of getting them around and trying to get them in everybody's hands. So really appreciate their hard work.
So what else are you guys up to at Midnight Sun these days? besides waiting for your big anniversary?
Yeah, besides trying to maintain our pulse and try to have an anniversary, you know, we're just doing one-offs in cans. We got a couple projects that I can't talk about just yet that'll be coming up in the next year. But yeah, we got a lot of different stuff going on. So I think even though it's looking to be a pretty challenging economy the next couple of years, I think we're going to keep doing what we do best, and that's making super high quality draft beer and do a lot of and canned beer and make some products that hopefully blow some people's minds, or otherwise just something they can enjoy.
You play with your new hot liquor tank?
Yes. So COVID has thrown a wrench into some of our plans for the spring. We were installing actually 3 new tanks. So unfortunately, we were only able to install 1 at this point, and I got 2 sitting up at my warehouse right now just waiting to go in. So yeah, so we're seeing a little bit of growth. Even the last couple of years, it was, you know, challenging, the recession. But yeah, we've seen enough growth that we've been investing in new equipment. And then, you know, being a 25-year-old business, you know, we deal with things that newer breweries aren't dealing with, like equipment and reaching the end of its service life. Like last year, we just had to replace our boiler for the brewery, which is, you know, basically the heart of the whole thing. And a lot of people are investing in equipment to, you know, modernize or, you know, grow. And we're at the point now where we're trying to do both that and replacing aging equipment too. So it's an interesting place to be.
One of the things we talked about during the virtual tour, I should say, talked about your shift to smaller bottle format.
Yeah, we've, you know, 22-ounce bombers and growlers come in and out of vogue. And that was actually my laugh during this age of COVID, because growlers became the hottest commodity in America. And it was very hard to get any supply. And we were lucky to get a pallet of blank growlers here right at the end of the supply. So it's funny to me, because when I started craft brewing in 2002, like, people really didn't even use growlers. I had people who'd show up at the brewery with 2-liter soda bottles to fill up at the taps. And then they became very popular, and then they've kind of diminished in popularity in the last couple of years. And we've seen the same trend with 22-ounce bottles. They were very, very popular in some places. Some geographical locations are still very popular, but more people are going to smaller format containers. So we have a bottler that can fill anything from an 8-ounce bottle to a 3-liter bottle. So we decided to give 12-ounce bottles a shot. So that's, we are looking to the future as other options, you know, to put different products into 12-ounce bottles. And I just think certain beers are best served in glass. I know a lot of breweries have been putting really high-end and big beers in cans, but we were, I had a meeting with our can supplier last year, and they couldn't encourage me enough to tell people to not age beer in cans. So for good sellable beers, you know, we're going to continue putting them in the glass, and that's kind of the idea behind the 12-ounce format.
I don't know. I have this vision in my mind of a 3-liter Arctic Devil.
Yeah.
So maybe you guys should consider that at some point.
Yeah. We'll do the Magnum runs or whatever.
Yeah. Magnum of Termination Dust.
I think Magnums are 1.5 liters, whether they Nebuchadnezzars or something like that, or 3 liters. Yeah. So, maybe one of these days, maybe we'll go to 3-liter bottles of Pilsner or something. Who knows? So, you know, when you're dealing with craft brewery consumers, never rule out anything in the future.
Anything else going on the BGA front? Obviously, this virus rolled in and put the kibosh on getting SB, what is it, 52? Getting 52
yep.
through the legislature again. So
yeah, it was a real bummer. We had everybody at the table this year, from public health, public safety, to the bar owners, to the you know, the manufacturers, distillers, wineries, breweries, and everybody was had a compromise, had an agreement. You know, of course, like with any compromise, it's not the most popular thing in the world, but it works for everyone, and it took a long, long, hard struggle to get there. And so we'll see what happens. It's you know, the legislature may reconvene for a special session, and we're working with our legislators now to please take up the issue of SB 52. We've spent 8 years working on it, and it's really important to us, because there's a lot of streamlining of license changes and myself and my my colleague over at Char, Sarah Oates, have talked extensively about the fact that there's going to be a lot of bars closing, a lot of restaurants closing, and there's going to be a lot of license transfers coming up here in the future. And the easier we can make that, you know, the shorter time frame that restaurants and bars will be closed, meaning less people are out of work for, you know, for so much time. So that's a big one we're trying to push, is getting them to recognize that we need to streamline these laws so that we can get bars and restaurants reopened after they have a shutdown or whatever it may be. So we've also been working with AMCO to try to get outdoor seating, temporary outdoor seating programs set up so that people continue to have, you know, healthy spread on their customers, allowing them to sit outside, which is, according to CDC, a better option for dining and things like that. Yeah, we're still working on regulatory state issues. And then on the federal level, you know, just like a lot of other businesses, we're trying to figure out what the federal government's going to do to help the industry to survive. So nationally, the Brewers Association has made estimates of up to 40% of the craft breweries in the nation closing. I don't think we'll hit that number, but we could see numbers as high as 20%, which would be, you know, well over 1,000 breweries closing nationally. We're also working at the federal level to see how we can get the federal government to help us keep folks in business.
Yeah, well, on that happy note.
Yeah, just go out and support local craft beer. You know, I would say we're working hard to make sure that our tap rooms are safe for you and safe to go out and enjoy a beer. So please go and do so. And just remember, when you buy local, you support local. So 70% of every dollar spent on a craft beer in Alaska stays in the state of Alaska. So that's my big thing. Keep buying local, keep supporting your neighbors, and we'll keep supporting you. So other than that, yeah, we're just excited to be getting back on the path and continue putting out cool one-offs and serving people good food.
All right. Well, hey, Lee, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us today. Really appreciate it. Enjoy your belated anniversary celebration next week.
Yeah. It's a whole year, you know.
Yeah. All righty. Well, thanks again.
All right. Thanks, Bill.